So, Tyler here.
Something's going on with my phone already.
It's the volume at in this guy. It's pretty good. Okay, I've got a message. It's going off to a bad start.
I can hear the noise in the background in my backyard. It's a beautiful night. It's still pretty early in London, Ontario. 6 p.m. on a Friday night, traffic going hard, emergency sirens already ringing, kind of night. And the other piece goes along with my life is sitting in the backyard with a train track. Oh, not a very good judge of feet. 100 feet, I'd say. That. Back, so our yard's not that good. Must be longer than that. Whatever. And the train track's back there. So it comes. Might come during this. I actually don't know. I'm recording this right now. And I'm waiting for a couple friends to come on, a couple buddies. We're going to have a good time. Have a couple drinks, good chat. For now, so just meditating on the last couple days, just life in general. I will say some of this is guided by some psilocybin, just a small dose, but it always brings me into an introspective place and one that I like to be in. And in so many ways, it's such a, for myself, anyways, a therapeutic, calming, I guess I will say substance that modifies my mood, makes me feel better, allows me to just focus a little bit. I feel like you get running around so much, especially just at the point in my life where, you know, working on lots of different things at once, projects, clients, all this stuff, you can get so detached, you can get so frantic. And I know that I deal with, you know, on days talking to too many people, I get all nervous, I get this energy, and you know, a lot of times I use marijuana to actually calm that. And I guess St. Mary Jane is always coming. But there's something different about psilocybin that has to be controlled, because I do believe there is I do believe there is an effect on you that can be destructive from magic mushrooms. And people don't even like that term, and it's not one that I even, they are magic mushrooms, but I realize you had to use the word psilocybin. And I don't know, there's just it's been a life-changing thing for myself. But you can definitely have this moment where it can create sort of too many connections. And when people start forming connections, that can be a beneficial thing, patterns that they identify. But what I found in the times when I got too deep into my own journey when I was 21 and going through a lot, was that the connections became overwhelming. And many of them, I'm guessing, non-existent. And, you know, it depends, of course, your view on life. Is it statistically that you're looking at it? Is it a fate thing that you're looking at it? Is it just, a coincidence? These kind of things. And depending on your perspective of the world, it would change how you would see this. But yeah, and so there's a spot where you have to be careful with psilocybin, and as when you listen to you know, many of the people in a, the, you know, one of the most, to myself, just the, an organization that I hear or put up on a pedestal is MAPS. I'm hoping right now that I can actually start volunteering with MAPS Canada, which would be just such an amazing thing, because if you have firsthand experience with psilocybin, you understand that, you do understand the positive piece of it. And again, I have been talking, I'm very conscious about the what the negative piece can be, is when those connections are made, when it can spiral you into, you know, psychosis, manic state that can be dangerous. You know, in different times and different points, when I was going through everything, when I was, you know, when I was 21, I made the mixture, I guess, of both Mary Jane and psilocybin, combined with the stress, with the stage in my life, the existential crisis that I was sort of under, and just the long occurring events, concussions, all this stuff sort of just seemed to pile up at once. And in those times, I would say that there was overusage of psilocybin and just a complete misunderstanding of what they were, the consequences of using them, how they do affect you, what it's doing in your brain, what mechanisms are being pulled. And so I think that's a big piece that I'm trying to get at, is this is something that we need to properly understand. And unfortunately, for so long, research, that's not been a thing that people really want to research. And that's because of the stigma. It can be informed, and many people believe, by pharmaceutical companies who understand the power of psilocybin. And this isn't just a shroom head sitting on the back deck and ranting. This is, you know, scientific studies, John Hopkins. There's studies taking all over the place, Denver decriminalizing, Oregon's looking at actually basically putting psychedelic supervisors, which any person can access. There's a revolution coming right now, and people who have seen, again, the impact of what psilocybin can do, the beneficial effects, and what we've seen in these studies is, you know, dramatic drops in addiction, in PTSD, in depression, and they're sustained. They're not just short-term benefits. They've seen sustained positive benefits over months. And, you know, the other piece that has come with psilocybin, but not just psilocybin, what we've seen with DMT, what we've seen with MDMA, LSD, like all these things that are now going through different stages of research, MDMA and psilocybin being at the foremost of that, and I believe even LSD on that journey as well too, ketamine, these things are often described as some of the most magical, but not just magical, spiritual, those are the words that they use, but mythical, like these, they've, like mystical, that's the word that they're using in the one research. These people are having mystical experiences. They can say it's one of the most meaningful experiences of their life, and these are one of those. And when I say what these are, the experience, what I'm talking about in these studies are, they have a person basically laying down, they would administer psilocybin, LSD, MDMA, whatever substance it is. Sometimes there will be one counselor, one person in the room monitoring. Sometimes there will be two. A lot of times there's organizations who want to have one male and one female, trip sitter, but also a certified doctor, be there to help guide them through. And so they would often, which is really interesting to me. They, a lot of times, for example, if we go psilocybin, they'll administer it in a pill form, and I'm just like having a thought. I'm like in my backyard. I'm like, I hope my neighbors aren't around. I'm getting excited about this stuff. But they administer it in a pill form, and you would take that, and a lot of times they'll actually put a sleeping mask on you, and you'll be able to, you'll lie on your back, and sometimes they will, I believe, talk to you. There's, you know, a lot of times it's a preparation session or like a pre-prep, and some of them are even like Michael Pollan, who went through an LSD session. They made him do breathing and exercise, I believe, in the day before or in the morning. So there are these rituals, and I think when we look at this stuff, what really determines how effective this is, but where also the damages can come in with psilocybin, with psychedelics, with some of these substances, is that, lost it, hearing a couple things, anticlimactic. The problem with those substances is they're just, they're so powerful, and if you have the wrong intent actually going into them, you can have a lot of problems. And not even the wrong intent, it's the right, you know, how is your state mentally? Are there massive change, if, you know, if there's massive changes going on, then you probably shouldn't be doing psilocybin. And so here I am talking that and preaching that. But, you know, there needs to be worry about the power of these substances as well too. And as a person who believes a lot in decriminalization, you know, reducing penalties for people who have psychedelics and drugs in general, which is just a whole other discussion. But, you know, this is a time that we need to change this. And I think most people can dramatically feel that the world in general has become more chaotic, a little aggressive and primal. And, you know, not that it's a John O'Leary, you know, LSD in the water thing, but, you know, I think a little bit more empathy and introspection and the ability to process what's going on in our lives in a more holistic, just beautiful way, that would be, it would be good for all of us, it'd be good for humanity. And it's a really tough thing to talk about because there's so much stigma that still goes along with psychedelics. And in my own case, I had really difficult experiences a lot of times commingled by the use of psychedelics. And so as an outsider, for certainly, and it's been really difficult as an insider, as you think, the ability to differentiate, you know, the good from the bad with that usage, with that time in my life and with that stuff, has been, that's a difficult thing to sort through. But when you look at it, and when it comes down to it, and I say, Tyler, what is out of it? Is it a net positive or is it a net negative? And it's a net positive, and it continues to be. And not only that, I've continued to understand how substances like this can be used to further improve your life and better your life and increase happiness and quality of life. And this is just another extension, I believe, of what we want as humans, is what we've seen in this human optimization movement, and I would just say technology. A lot of people look at psilocybin, MDMA, ketamine, all these things, they actually look at them like a technology. And if you go to tribes, if you go to people and just groups of people who have the respect, have the understanding, have the knowledge of this stuff, that's what we believe. We go to Mayan cultures, it's an ancient technology, and it was used in a lot of different purposes. Interesting, like, just like they, hunters would take psilocybin before they went on a hunt because it increased their senses and their perceptions. You know, for myself, one of the big pieces of psilocybin is the fact that it actually seems to just change your perspective of time. It's such an odd feeling to describe. It's ineffable, as Michael Pollan sort of talks about. But it's really interesting and sort of palpable, to be honest. And so I'm, you know, basically just trying to understand how this can be approached as well too, from an angle, because I think the world needs this. I think a lot of people can agree in some form or thought that we need to figure out a better form of therapy and healing and reducing trauma, and you know, as I sort of alluded to, the financial aspect of it with pharmaceutical companies and stuff, we need to stop this continual pushing of pills, which we have seen is costly, detrimental, and has been turned into sort of a racket. And so there needs to be a retaking of it, and there's a lot of people working on that, but it also needs to be done in the proper way. And what happened here with O'Leary in the 60s, 70s was he got it out of control, and he was doing experiments with students, and this tune in and drop out, I should know that. This mentality, though, it just went through the culture and became too reckless, and that's that dangerous part of psychedelics. And when we see those stereotypes in media, in movies, those are based on real things, and anyone who tells you different is lying. And as a as a true lover of psychedelics, of psilocybin, it's not the right way to approach them. And you have to be honest about the negative parts of it if you're going to try to talk about the positive parts. And so I do try to be aware of that as I'm talking about any of this stuff, and I'm obviously very passionate about it. When you firsthand see it, you can the positive effects I can't even describe to you. And you always have to pull this bias, because there's this, you know, magic mushrooms or, you know, MDMA, all these things that are mystical, magical experience, there comes this part where we have, you know, what is real and what is not. And that's a really scary thing for a lot of people. And I think that's where, you know, when people talk about, like, people have LSD trips and then they never come back. That's the problem that that's a real thing that can happen if you just have not had the psychedelic experience that is needed. And I felt that fear, I felt that inability to discern reality and what was real. And I think the important part of any psilocybin session, if I'm going back, oh wow, I'm going back to how they actually administer this, you know, it's important to integrate. And so if you go to these counseling sessions, a really big piece of it is actually integrating. And if you go, and so if you're in those counseling sessions, they'll have deep discussions, and it's a very introspective thing throughout, but a lot of times they'll actually debrief with you after and go through a bunch of things and try to understand what changes you sort of felt or what you were thinking about and process that. And if you don't have that ability to process this, and I think a lot of people do, even I would say trips, if it's solo, you have to make sure that you can integrate back with reality. And I guess even I would say part of what I'm doing right now is doing that. I'm integrating, I'm talking, just choosing to record it, and in many ways I'm okay with that being my outlet and how I talk and work through and integrate back into reality. And I continue to do this with people as well too, and it's really important. So if you're in those sessions, that they actually do that and help you take those powerful mystical experiences that you can have and help you put that in the realm of the perspective of the real world that we do live in, not just physically, but I would say culturally. Because as we've seen, a lot of people, and they see this whole different world, and then they immediately, it changes their behavior and perception and perspective so much that they radically alter their behavior in their life. And we've seen a lot of times psilocybin or MDMA or like ketamine, LSD, these substances can have like very big impact on people's decision making, basically. And that's led to breakups and life changes and lots of different things. Many, again, good, maybe to eat better, to work out more, because that's what I feel when I use anything like psilocybin. Even with Mary Jane, besides the munchies, you know, it's an introspection to say, Tyler, you need to actually eat better. You need to stop eating more unhealthy food. You need to focus more on good food. You need to work out and be a little bit more energetic and enthused. I work out pretty hard, but not, you know, come on, Tyler, turn it up another level kind of thing. And so, and the funny part about doing this, and you know, there's enough people who listen to this podcast, I just can't imagine the perception that comes off, because there's an outer layer, and this is what we're all facing with anyone, especially who is a supporter of psilocybin, is that there's this pieces of me in there But there's also the professional piece that needs to be presented, and the professional piece that is actually there, because everyone I know who, you know, is truly advocating for psilocybin through it, whether it's MAPS or MAPS Canada or, you know, researchers at Johns Hopkins or all across everywhere with all this is happening and all the great places that are decriminalizing this kind of stuff, we're getting such a better understanding. And we need that. We need that to continue. And it's difficult because of that stigma and the ability to keep, you know, keep a professional image when, you know, a lot of times against psilocybin use, I gotta stop saying this over again, but you know what I'm talking about, has been, you know, displayed as, you know, rambunctious, rowdy, rebels, dropouts, failures, hippies, all this stuff that has been forced for so long through, stereotypes on television, animated, whatever medium that we've been watched, and that stigma has continued. It decreases, and I would say with that, it's a similar decrease that we've seen across just mental health in general, a focus on mindfulness, on conscientiousness, all these things that are so important in our life, cornerstones of what makes us human, and the things that allow us to actually modify our lives to make us who we want to be, which is the true purpose of, you know, our lives. And if unfortunately that awareness we don't get instilled in so many people, and a lot of time filtered through media, we don't have those mechanisms in place to reflect on ourselves and make the changes that we want to make to actually get to the place that we want to get. And that's a really difficult thing for so many people. If you haven't had the right mentors, the right education, the right life experiences to get through that process is so difficult. And in so many ways, I just feel so, you know, blessed and continue that I've even had the opportunity to have the education that I've gotten, been around the people that I've had to make it through some of the stuff that that I just went through, and still love life and continue to learn every day and make mistakes and screw up all the time, but keep just powering through and learning. And I think we all deserve that. I will say, there's another side of this that I've seen, and there's a good person who alludes to this. Is Mark? Mark? Ooh, I don't want to say that. Mark Ronson. He's the one who wrote Ronson, The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck, and now he's got everything is fucked. And so we've got to look at it in that perspective as well, too. So when I say that we need to have purpose and live the life and change ourselves, I can completely believe in that. But there's the other side of this where, you know, what is that thing that's actually pushing us for that purpose? And we look to a lot of more ancient ancient religions and wisdom, and it's not about necessarily always pushing yourself and doing that. It's about being happy with who you are in that moment. And not even just not happy, but experiencing the moment. And so this can be, some people would say, I'm out of shape, for example, and I want to get better. But then you listen to these ancient philosophies and you hear, you should be happy with yourself. So that's a really difficult thing. And it's a tougher thing to get through. And I think, the fair way to get back to that, we always have to bring it down to, science and practical evidence as far as we know that can at least show us from an objective point, are you healthy or not? And I think that's, maybe the mechanism in place, or the, not the mechanism, but the scale or the measurement stick that we use for that. So, what time is it? It's 8:30. My buddy's coming over. Now I just sound like a crazy ranting man in the backyard, and I'm sorry for that. I couldn't imagine listening to this. I guess I will put this out on a podcast and we'll see what people say. Maybe I won't announce it as publicly or soft launch it or something. I don't know. That's not really true Todder style. I just need this to be a topic. Not a topic. This needs to be pushed. The evidence is there. If you look into it, I want to continue to share more information on these details as best I can in both a way that looks at it spiritually and holistically, and in the fun way that it needs to, but keeping in mind that this is a practical world we're living in, and we're also dealing with systems and institutions, and we need to keep that credibility and factual hard evidence to show that what these substances are doing, which have been portrayed so negatively, have actual positive impact. And you know, when I say that, I know with utmost confidence that we're going to be in a good place now, and a lot of people can feel this, but we're going to be in a great spot because we have proven this, and we're only going to continue as we do more. And I don't know, you know, I say the we, I don't know exactly who we are, but I would say, you know, the MAPS organization, MAPS Canada, you know, people even who are selling magic mushroom kits across the world, you know what I mean, all these people who are shamans and, you know, trying to bring this element of whatever you say, like spirituality, back to a more, you know, way that functions in this world. Of course, we need the, you know, we need the businessmen, we need all this stuff. It needs to happen to function in this current system. But we also need to be able to be self-aware and making modifications to that system. And so this will allow us to do it. It's just, how can you do it? How can you do it effectively? Not too crazily at once. All these things, because it's a difficult world that we're navigating through. And again, it's pretty clear to most people that it's not operating in the best manner. No matter what side you're on, something's going wrong. So if people say, Tyler, you're not professional, you're talking about stuff that you shouldn't be talking about, that you're using substances that you shouldn't be using, that you, you know, I'm just not going to take that. And I understand why people would say that to myself or anyone who's using substances. And again, there needs to be used safely. That's why I believe that there should be centers everywhere. Just like we have, you know, therapists for normal depression or treatment or trauma or PTSD, we need to have, you know, psilocybin therapy. We need to have ketamine therapy. We need to have LSD. We need to have MDMA. And we need to see what this does, because, you know, so many people have seen the positive parts, and we want to know. This technology can be really powerful for us as humanity as we do navigate through this. We need it. I hate to just think about it and how much it's brought up, but climate change and all the problems that we're facing. Biologically as the world, but just culturally getting bruised and beaten up, and you know, fuck, man, just shouldn't swear like that, but damn, man, we are struggling right now, and there's so many people pushing with good ideas and good leadership, but it's one of those things. I feel like when they say, even, you know, you get into politics and you just get crushed by the system, and the good people go in and they just spit them out, and they, you know, the optimism that you have is just drained out of you. Like, we don't want that anymore. We need to have the people who are trying to change the system in a good way, using good science, showing how it can be improved, using the right numbers, showing the statistics. We need to empower those people and keep pushing them. And yeah, we're stuck in a system that's too slow, that doesn't understand how to work those. I say the word again, mechanisms, real time. Like, why aren't we able to, you know, we have amazing progress in innovation in fintech, and I think that's only going to continue. And I can't actually even speak at this from an expert, because I'm just not involved enough in my own, you know, I use good technology for my business, but I'm just not deep into fintech like a lot of people are. So I can't actually speak with this authority, but although we've had so much innovation, there's still so much lack of technological infrastructure, but not even that, just free, you know, with free trade of resources. Like, we talk about the capitalist market and what we're in, but there needs to be a resource. Like, is it capitalist? It needs to be driven by resource or demand, right? So if we can see someone, you know, in this circumstance, in the system that we're in, doing well in business, we should, especially as, you know, a Canadian, or maybe if I'm going to use a London, Ontario example, or whoever it is that's making a push for the good of humanity, that in our case, we hope that is, I guess, contributing in a practical sense, which could be jobs, which means they're paying taxes, all these things that we classically look at as success. We need to be able to push this and continue. And as we look at the race globally for how this system of new technology, whether it's 5G, high-speed autonomous car, all these things, we're going to have to understand how we can function through this all. And it's a very competitive spot right now with the powers, with the people in the control of some of these, this power, not necessarily being the best ones. And I think we can all, you know, pretty quickly put a couple people into your mind of people you don't want with this kind of technology. And so we need to be competitive with Canadians. We need to innovate and adapt and function in this modern economy, but we also need to have security and defense. We need to protect ourselves. And sometimes by protecting ourselves, you do need to make investments in people who have, there's people who are, who understand so much at a young age now through the right experience, whether that's technological or just sucking in the data we have. The right people are just, it's incredible. And seeing that at the Collision Conference, like, it's crazy to see how intelligent some people are at such a young age. It's actually ridiculous. You know, we have so much power and we can only amplify it. But that's happening everywhere. And even if you would say, you know, objectively, if you look at the Chinese culture, for example, well, obviously they have way more people, but not that, they also work hard. Like, the culture is work hard, never stop. We've seen this with, I don't even know how many hours a week that they say, and what Jack Ma endorsed and what we've seen over there. Like, it's crazy, that culture, how hard they want to work, how quickly they're innovating, what the progress is, the stuff that we see on the outside and the stuff that we don't see. And we're seeing this stuff with Hawaii now. I can't even say it. God damn. It's going crazy. It's going crazy with the security stuff. Phones banned. God damn, Canada getting involved. Kidnapping some lady. Not kidnapping, just kidding, Canada. But holy, it's a chaotic place right now that we're dealing with. So, I guess it's 8:45. Well, still on my back porch alone. I hear a person beside me. Yard. I haven't had any trains, which is surprisingly nice. So I feel like I should pull this off and end this before that actually happens. This has probably been weird for you. It's been weird for me. But this is my experience. I'm sharing it with you. I don't care, raw and, you know, raw, whatever. It's not that I just, like, don't give a shit. I think a lot of people actually feel that way in the world right now. I actually do. But it's time for the ego to go down. It's time for us to stop. Just continuing to prioritize the wrong things. Measure the wrong things as success. All these things that we constantly hear. And I don't want to go into preach mode. But it's so clear. It's so obvious. It's so easy for so many people to see, and it's frustrating when you and others can see what's happening unfolding, and yet for some reason it's not coming into place. And a lot of times we talk about, like, what, how do you make change, how do we force change quicker? We look at protests, we look at what's happening in France, we look at when do changes be made. It's when the pressure of society gets put on it so much, the people, the citizens who vote, who are truly do have some control, as long as they don't let bigger systems take advantage of them or let it get out of their control. When that pressure is put, things change. And maybe that's it. Maybe we're just being too apathetic and we're not putting in the change and the passion where we need to. Maybe we should be. Maybe I should be in Toronto right now at Queen's Park with a bunch of people, and we should be, like, there are out there, you know, trying to push change. But how do we do this? How can we push continued sustained change some things can be pushed quickly and some things actually do need to be slowed down and done practically. And you know, when you talk about protests and then you get into riots and then you get into revolution, it needs to be controlled and it needs to be sustained and it needs to be done for the right reason with the right leadership and the right systems. Like, the stuff we've seen can get out of control so much. And it was a great piece by and I always forget his name, but I can't believe this is gonna elude me, but The Laws of Human Nature, so it's Robert Greene, sorry, where they talk about a school that basically took over these teachers and how quick it basically just delved into, like, out of control students, like torturing teachers, getting out of this. And I don't know how I got deep into this point, but what I'm saying is, when they thought they were doing something good, this was during the revolution, and it turned into something so deep and dark because it was out of control, it was not done. And even though some of the stuff that they were doing with the torturing, all this stuff was so systematic, the beliefs that were put on top were not right. But at the same time, that primal part of us as humans, when put into situations like this, where either it's pressure on two different groups or there's stress in the world, even, you know, as we're seeing climate change, things like this, those can push and come to the forefront and cause chaos. We need to be able to understand how to deal with that. And so it's no, I just want to, I'm talking about it now. I can only talk to so many people in a person every day. And so this is the space that I talk from. Sometimes I talk from it completely sober. And on a Monday afternoon at work, other times I sit here on a Friday night and I just want to talk and I want to think out loud and talk to not just myself, but in this weird way, we're plugged into this system and are connected. And whether it's the dopamine from the likes from the Facebook or the comments or the messages or the conversations that come in real life, there's a beautiful part that comes with having these talks with myself and sharing them with you. And for anyone who just listens to Tyler and says, holy shit, what the hell is going on with his head, I truly admire you, whoever you are. Just thank you. I appreciate it very much, because it's quite the roller coaster on. And even as I continue to see more intelligent people, like, damn, at this Collision Conference, some of the smartest people I know, but still, like, no one knows what the fuck is going on. It's hilarious. And yes, there's a ton of great investors and shit and companies who have systematic processes in place. But even that, watch this keynote at the conference in Toronto from the guy from Disney, the head of creativity, and it's like his main message to me was just like, innovate or die. And these companies who have these old systems in place are being eradicated by like a couple kids, like in San Francisco, not even more, anywhere in the world, people are able to make these changes really quickly with scrappy teams and the amazing scale of technology that's both paid and private, but also now open source, and the systems that we have to manage those libraries. Oh my god, the capabilities that we have are just endless right now to disrupt so many things in place. But with that disruption, we have to be so careful. And we talk about disruption, we talk about disruptions. It needs to be done, it's obvious, but man, it can cause some chaos. And so, how do we do this? How do we make a better world? And what is a better world? And that has to become a discussion as well, too. Is it back to that piece where we look at it scientifically and say a healthy world, climate? Why do, is it, oh, there's an ozone that's causing damage? Or is it, when water depletes, this is what happens. We lose animals, these animals lose their environment, which means we actually lose food and healthy food. Like, we need to consider these things as well, too, and not just look at it in a selfish or primal or tribal way, which is a really difficult thing for all of us. And I think all of us have just flared up our defense mechanisms and our egos right now, and it's really hard to put those down. And it's almost like Game of Thrones, where Jon Snow and them have attacked a village and they've rang the bell. They're looking at Jon Snow and they're all the guys who have, like, basically put their swords down. They've got their swords up and they're like, what is this moment? is it gonna, are they gonna fight? Are they gonna fight? And then they just drop it, right? They drop the swords. Like, that's where we need to be. We need someone to drop the swords down. And right now we're getting that Game of Thrones shit. Or the dragon ripping up the city and Jon Snow and his buddies are slaughtering those guys who had just put down their swords minutes ago, along with an entire city. And that's truly a metaphor for what is happening in a way in our world right now. One that is hurts to see and one that hurts to be reflected on ourselves. Yeah, that's quite the fantasy land, but man, I don't know if people watch that stuff with that in it, but when something so big culturally, one of the biggest cultural things, wild, like so many people are watching it or feeling it or thinking about it every day, and the amount of watching it, that's attached to our world, that's attached to our culture. There's something there significant, there's meaning when so many people are invested so deeply in a universe, whether through it was the novel version or through the series or just the culture of talking to people and hearing about it. It just rippled through and resonated with so many people. And we're seeing that with other shows, Handmaid's Tale, all these things, man. And I hope through these mechanisms, not even the right word, you goddamn loser, buzzwords, Tyler, idiot. You know, it's through this I hope that we do see change. Like when you watch Handmaid's Tale, I'm pretty sure that's been like a pretty clear, like they're barely not even doing metaphors right now. It's just like, holy shit, this is fuck, guys. And we need to take that seriously. And people who are putting, even like people putting energy into that, the money and everything, yes, they're capitalizing on it, of course, but these people also care what they're doing, and they're passionate, and at the top of their game, and these are the messages that they're trying to send us and the content that they're creating. We have to think about that. I was almost done this, and then look what just happened. Life is, the word that I've been thinking a lot about is visceral. I feel it from I'm very up in my head, and I'm, you know, oftentimes thinking about other things even when I'm, you know, in the room. But at the same time, my ability to bring myself into the present has become so much better. And just whether it's deep breathing, whether it's talking to myself or working out or doing diaries and journaling or whatever it is, like I figured out so much stuff in the last 4 or 5 years to help through that stuff. And oh, such a relief. And it's something I hope to share, and I'm trying to share as much as I can in a non-preachy way and not too chaotic. And it's difficult because we're in this chaotic world, and there's a lot of things on the go, and I'm putting a lot of pressure on myself to try to execute in a lot of ways too. And so for many people, right now we feel that time is limited, and we're trying to make the most we can while we're in this sort of situation, thinking about the short term primarily because that's what's been triggered, but also still trying to think about the long term and where we want to be. So I'm on that ride with you, and I'm trying to do it honestly and transparently, and I hope that everyone does. And we're seeing this. I love the vulnerability that's going on, and done in the right way, this ability to have empathy for others and share who we are in a compassionate way is wonderful thing to see, and it can have a big impact on all of us. So with that, I'm gonna pause this. No train. Joy in the background. Cars, trees, birds, animals. What a beautiful place. So as much chaos, it's still a beautiful time to live. And I hope you feel the same way.